I don't know if you, like I, many years ago, used to sing a hymn, and the chorus used to go like this. Yes, Jesus is a friend of mine, and he with me doth all things share. For all is Christ's, and Christ is mine. Why should I have a care? For Jesus is a friend of mine. Well, when we have been looking in the Colossian epistle, this is precisely what we find. These wonderful things that Christ himself has won, and we are sharing it, and then with him. So I want you to turn to Colossians 2, as we're going to spend a little time in this chapter. We have seen in the past, and certainly not the first time by me, but on many, many occasions by our brother Mr. Welch and others who have occupied this pulpit and have stood firmly for this ministry, that our position in Christ by grace is absolutely untouchable. It was purchased at such a cost. And if we look at chapter 1, verse 13, we shall see what has been done. In verse 12, he says in chapter 1 of Colossians, giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness, and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins. And in verse 20, and having made peace through the blood of his cross, by him to reconcile all things unto himself, by him I say, whether they be things in earth or things in heaven, and you that were sometime alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now hath he reconciled in the body of his flesh through death, to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in his sight. Now this is his accomplishment. And this is what we possess by sheer and absolute grace. We didn't work for it. We didn't earn it. There was nothing that we could ever have done to procure us such a salvation. This is through Christ and Christ alone. The work that was accomplished on Calvary's cross is the all-sufficiency for this position in grace that we have. And we rest assured. And we too have heard something of this peculiar position, not peculiar funny, but peculiar wonderful, that we now occupy in Christ. The dispensation of the secret having been revealed. And then he goes on in this end of chapter 1 to reveal not only the dispensation of the secret, but the riches of this glory, the riches of the glory of this secret among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you. And then he appears to have a great conflict. For in chapter 2 he said, for I would that ye knew what great conflict I have for you, And for them at Laodicea, and for as many have not seen my face in the flesh, that their hearts might be comforted, that is, strengthened together, being knit together in love, unto all the riches of the, here's riches again, of the full assurance of understanding. It is to this end, the acknowledgement of the secret of God. And the Revised Version has it, that they may know the secret of God, even Christ. This is the struggle and the conflict that the apostle is engaged in, that they might come to this point, that they might know the secret of God, even Christ. And we notice that the Apostle Paul's energies are directed towards the perfection of the believer. Not a condition of holiness that we understand with halos round the head, that type of perfection, but his object is to see that the believer being established goes on to the very end. This is his object. And all his energies are directed in this direction. In fact, it was extended in Ephesians 4 that we read together. And I just want to briefly run over it again. In verse 12, having said that he gave some to occupy various posts, it was for the, in verse 12, the perfecting of the saints. And it was for this, in verse 13, till we all come into the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto the perfect man. And what lovely phrase this is, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. This is the apostle's object, to get believers to reach this point, come what may. And the same directive is issued to us who sit here today. He is concerned, even though of course he's no longer with us, but he's left it on record, that my concern, my conflict, my fight is that you will go on to the very end until you reach what I've just described as the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Now then, in this respect, whilst he's preaching and teaching, in verse 28 of chapter 1, speaking of Christ, he says, whom we preach, warning every man and teaching every man in all wisdom, that we may present every man perfect. He's at it again, you see, perfect in Christ Jesus. Now, it's rather striking, and I think that we should be made aware of these things. Sometimes we read and they don't register. In fact, I was coming along in the car with Ernie, and I said to Ernie, Ernie, where's Phoenix Road? He said, the funny story. I said, look, there it is. We stop here every time we come to the chapel, and it's as big as it's possible to be, staring straight ahead. And he laughed and said, of course, you would say a thing like that. But don't you see, it's possible to look at something and not even notice it. It's possible to see that the apostle here issues warnings, and when warnings are issued, it's very wise that we should take heed. You know, it's the Hebrew epistle exhorts the believer, take heed to the things that we have heard. Take heed lest at any time they slip away from us. It's so easy. Learn a language, friend, and then give it a rest for 2 or 3 years, and you're groping for a word that you once knew with ease. It's so easy to allow these things to slip away or even allow ourselves to slip away from them, whichever it is. And it's wise that we should heed the warnings that the apostle is issuing. Why the warnings? Well, at the end of chapter 3 of Colossians, the apostle says in verse 23, "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ." Now, at the beginning of the Colossian epistle, we shall find in verse 12 of chapter 1 that he gives thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light. Now, it's quite easy to read these two verses, perhaps with a distance one between the other, that to think the one means the same as the first, that the inheritance, being made meet for the inheritance, may be the same as the reward of the inheritance. But these are two entirely different things by reason of the language which is used. He hath made us meet. He has fitted us, equipped us. He has given us this wondrous salvation. He has given us this glorious cloak of righteousness. He has given us everything that is sufficient to present us before his Father without spot or without wrinkle. Now, this is a position in Christ purchased by his precious blood that can never, as far as we are concerned, be won or lost. It is ours and ours alone as a gift by grace. That's one thing. That's the being made meet for the inheritance of the saints in the light. But now he says, there is a reward of the inheritance. And this is an entirely different thing, because he concludes by saying, having introduced this reward of the inheritance, "But he that doeth wrong," you see, now he's introducing conditions. "He that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done. And there is no respecter of persons." You see, it's possible to know of this reward. Oh, friends, am I saying anything new? No. I'm just merely repeating what we've heard over the past years. And glorious ministry. Glorious warnings, and grant that these might be imprinted on our hearts as with a pen of steel. Let's never forget it. So the gift is one thing. The reward is entirely another. And there are agencies, satanic, human, that are ever ready, knowing that they cannot take your life, which is in Christ, away, for your life is hid with Christ in God. They know that they cannot touch it. But they also know another thing, that it has been written, "Hold fast, let no man take your crown." This very language indicates that there is a possibility of loss. This is it. The crown, which is over and above the life, the salvation, which is by faith in Christ. But the crown and the reward is something extra. And it's something, believe me, that can be lost. It can be lost. In this respect, in Philippians 3, the apostle urges an imitation and his example. Again, perfection is his object. Let's look at this. In verse 17, he says, "Brethren, be followers or imitators together of me, and mark them which walk so as ye have an us for an ensample. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and tell you even weeping, that they are enemies, not of Christ, not of the gospel, but of the cross of Christ. And this is essential to know this, because it's a question of forgetting what has been nailed to his cross and taken out of the way. And these believers here, they've become enemies of the cross of Christ. Why? Because their God is their belly, and they mind earthly things. In contrary to the apostles' injunction, set your mind on the things which are above, where Christ sits. You know, this is tremendous truth, and there's no mistaking. This is language which is quite simple to understand. They were beginning to mind earthly things. They were beginning to concern themselves with things of the flesh and not realizing that they were no longer citizens of earth, for their citizenship was in heaven. And so he goes back and speaks of this question of righteousness. Now he says here in verse 10 of the same chapter, his object is that I may know him and the power of his resurrection, being made conformable unto his death, if by any means I may attain unto the resurrection of the dead. Or rather, he means, of course, something very special here, the resurrection from among the dead, and particularly that resurrection, a specific one. And he says, not as though I'd already attained, either were already perfect. This is the going on to the end, remember, not this holy state where you walk with your hands together looking always up to the ceiling. Not that type of holiness. This perfection is going on, because he goes on to say that he's after apprehending or laying hold on that which I was laid hold on by Jesus Christ. I'm introducing a little revised version there, because there's an emphasis. Brethren, I count not myself to have yet laid hold, but this one thing I do. I forget those things which are behind, and reach forth unto those things which are before. I press toward the mark. And this word gives the picture of the charioteer leaning over his chariot, straining his steeds on to reach the goal. All this is involved in this word, I press on. And no doubt you've seen pictures to indicate this. This is the apostle's eye, forgetting anything that's gone behind. His eye is on the mark. His object is the end, the goal. And he said, I press toward them. For what? The prize. Oh, friend. You see, the apostle is again bringing these two. The prize of the high calling, concluding this chapter with, there is a possibility of loss, for there are some that I tell you, even weeping, once they walked with him, now they don't walk anymore. This was the tragedy. And this what reduced the apostle to tears. I tell you, with tears running down my face, that they have become the enemies of the cross of Christ. There must be something very wonderful about this, friends, not only about salvation, but this wonderful freedom with which Christ has endowed us. He's taken everything that offends, everything which would hinder us from pressing on to that final goal where Christ is all sufficient. You need nothing else. Hassocks, cassocks, throw it on the fire. You need no one but Christ. Angels will stand aside. No one but Christ beside shall be my heavenly guide, Father to thee. Friends, there's nothing on this earth that will ever aid you in this respect. Only He is sufficient. The one offering that is able to perfect those who have been sanctified, to take them right on to the very end until you stand at that last moment in the presence of God, in the likeness of your Lord, perfect and without spots and without wrinkle. And the apostle doesn't leave this. For in 2 Timothy, you know, he emphasizes it again. We almost don't have to turn to it, do we? But we will turn to it. Oh, yes. He re-emphasizes this in verses 6 to 8. Where am I? Of chapter 4. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. And now he looks back over the years. I hope we shall all be able to say this when you do look back. I'm sure that man looks back over the years. I have fought a good fight. Friends, you know the moment you come into the knowledge of the dispensation of the secret, the very moment that you enter into this glorious position in Christ, you step on a battlefield with friend against friend and foe alike very often, and it's a struggle from beginning to the very, you'll never be out of it, friend. Neither shall I. But God, pray God that when we do reach the end, we can look back and say, I have fought a good fight. Sometimes, perhaps I haven't done so well. Perhaps there are times when I've fallen, but thank God I've got up again. There are times when I haven't wielded the sword of the Spirit as I might have done. But my, I fought a good fight. You know, I finished my course. It's been a long run. Weary in the process. Exhausted at times. But I finished. Have I ever told you I went to a sports day once and there was a very old member of the staff, he went in for the mile. Nobody thought he'd ever finish it. But you know, he was running long after the race was over and many other races were over. He was still running! And when he reached the tape, he got the biggest cheer that any victor had ever got that day. He finished the course and dropped to the ground. But my, what a cheer. Went up. I think people were only watching him. He was still running in the distance. And there were other races going up and down like this, but they were still watching this figure, limping, struggling, but he finished. A cheer. I think he should have got the cup, friends. He never got it, of course. But the pride with which he lifted his head, he finished the course. That's the same with us, you know. We shall slip. We shall run for a long time. But let it be said. Let us say, I've finished the course. And though I may have lost many things in the process, I have kept the faith. Therefore, there is laid up for me a crown. Here's the prize. Not righteousness. He had that. Oh, he spoke about the righteousness which he had by faith. not the righteousness which was by the law. He got no time for that. He slung that overboard long ago. But he possessed this righteousness without a doubt. But now he speaks the crown of righteousness which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. He doesn't stop there, you know, friends, does he? He said, and not to me, but unto all them also that love his appearing. He had his mind on you, on all those that would follow on after himself, and Timothy, and those faithful men, and those faithful men, and those faithful men, and at last, faithful men today, not unto me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing, and that are going on as an imitator of him. Friends, the time is going, but I must carry on just a little bit longer. And so, knowing all this, he says in verse 4 of chapter 2 of Colossians, let's just go back to this. It's too good to leave. And this I say in verse 4, and this is not saying, and this I say, lest any man should beguile you, but I say this, what? That in him, Christ, are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And I'm telling you this, because, lest, in case, any man should beguile you with enticing words or persuasiveness of speech, and it involves the steadfastness of your faith in Christ. And friends, there's going to be a lot of those people standing for what you and I do, rejoicing in those things that we do. There's going to be those with the persuasive words of speech, the enticing words, the smooth-tongued operator. Heard about them? The confidence trickster. You know, it was the apostle writing to the Hebrews, to those to whom he was saying that they had a better and an enduring substance. He says, cast not away your confidence. Friends, it can be either cast away or it can be dragged or slid away from you by an insidious method of persuasiveness of speech. For in this confidence, what does the apostle say? There is great recompense of reward. It's the reward he's got his mind on. For he knows that, I say, the life can't be touched and the reward can be taken. The steadfastness of faith in Christ is the focal point, and a loose hold, and I'm quoting now, a loose hold on the fullness of Christ will lay one open to deception, for this is a child of the persuasiveness of speech. Let no man beguile you, said the apostle. You know, this word is used of Eve, you know, the serpent beguiled Eve. Eve used the same words. The serpent beguiled me. Let no man beguile you, says the apostle. And let me conclude with these words. They are important because they deal with I can't somehow have the time to go into this a bit further, but he's speaking of the wisdom which is of God, the knowledge which is in Christ, and he puts it over against the wisdom of this world and man's wisdom, which can so often undermine the believer with that persuasive way, that oily tongue that can be listened to. You know, there is a Greek myth. I know that we had no time for myths in this chapel, but there might be a lesson here. You remember, I don't know if you do remember, Atlanta the swift-footed huntress had issued a challenge, anyone winning her, beating her in a race, could marry her, you see. And it was Hippomenes who took up the challenge. And it was Aphrodite, knowing that it was a bit of a hopeless quest, that she gave Hippomenes three apples, golden apples. And as Hippomenes ran, and Atalanta was beginning to increase her pace to pass him, he threw down an apple. And then he threw down another. And then he threw down a third. And this is how Walter Savage Landon describes it in his poem. From his hand now dropped a golden apple. She looked down and saw a glitter on the grass. Yet on she ran. He dropped a second. Now she seemed to stoop. He dropped a third. And now she seemed to stoop indeed. Yet swifter than a wren picks up a grain of millet, raised her head. It was too late. Only one step and only one breath. She lost the race. You say, friends, what's that got to do with me? We're in a race. There's many a golden apple of deception that can be thrown at your feet. One, you may ignore. Two, you may still ignore, but three, it may be so attractive. It may be so lustrous as to halt you and turn you aside. And the result, loss. Loss. Let us make sure. Let us make sure that we, as we have so learned Christ, to walk in Him, rooted, built up, and established, that we may go on forgetting those things which are behind, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and is sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. That's your position and mine.